Kia ora and welcome to Emmons Podcast, episode 251. Today is Friday, April 1st, 2011. No fooling. Today is actually the first podcast of my fifth season, because Monday was my fourth podoversary, the fourth anniversary of my podcast. And obviously I didn't make any big deal of that because I didn't even record. You get that, don't you? Well, today is April Fool's Day, and I've got something to say about that. But my main topics today, I'm going to tell you some more about what's going on in Christchurch, because there have been some developments over the past week, and also something else from New Zealand news. And then I have some expat news that I'm going to talk about and before wrapping it up for the week. First, about this April Fool's Day. I am not by nature a trickster. I don't, generally speaking, play pranks or take part in April Fool's Day tricks, mostly because I'm not very good at it. It's not that I can't act the part or whatever. Although I don't know that I can. The main issue is that I don't like hurting people. I don't like the feeling of when somebody does that to me, and I don't like it when somebody makes a fool out of me, all those sorts of things. So I don't like doing it to other people. Well, today I decided I was going to make an exception, and so I did play a prank. Over on Twitter, I have, as you may remember, a separate Twitter account just for the podcast. It's Amarin's Podcast, oddly enough. All one word. You're welcome to follow it. And so I tweeted today around midday, a little bit before, I think it was. I said, after much thought, I've decided to end my podcast effective immediately. Today seemed the right day to announce it. And then I provided a link, which was, shortened, so that it wasn't obvious what it was. And you click on the link, and it takes you to the Wikipedia page for April Fool's Day. And I thought that should make it abundantly clear. However, not everybody clicks the links to see what you're talking about. I mean, some people might think, oh, he's going to explain his reasons and so on, and then they'll click on it. That's what I was hoping anyway. Well, I did catch out a couple people, and I'm sorry for any distress that I caused. But, yes, I don't know what got into me. I just had to. I did tweet later. At this point, one is supposed to shout April Fools. I was hoping my link would do that for me, and I did. And I did hope that, I mean. And for some people it did, because people did follow up, and then they read that and realized that I was just joshing. And as I said, I'm not a trickster by nature. I don't normally do that sort of thing, but I was just feeling a bit impish today. And it only worked because I've talked in the past about the times I felt like stopping podcasting. And so it had an air of credibility to it. But anybody who really knows me knows that I don't do anything on impulse or out of the blue like that. So there's no way it was actually real. But again, if I did upset anybody, I am truly sorry about it. That certainly was not my intention, because I don't like it when people do that to me. But I was feeling impish today and just sort of went with it, which is not always a good thing to do, of course. Now, before I get into the news, I do have one little thing I want to say, and that's that I listened back to my previous episode, and I realized that my levels, my vocal levels, or whatever you call it, were too low. Certainly compared to the opening, the intro. And I am still working on that. I still don't quite have this whole mixer thing set up, because I'm using a different setup than I used to have, and I don't quite have it all ironed out yet, and I haven't had a chance to get Nigel to do it for me, because he's my technical person. So I do apologize if that continues, because it very well may for a while, until I get used to this. I do listen back before I posted to try to get it right, but I was in a bit of a hurry last time. Long story, there was actually a huge chunk of the podcast I deleted. It was relating to one of my news stories today that I'll talk about later on, and things were changing even as I was talking about it, and so I just decided it was simpler to just cut it out and then come back to the story later on, and that's what I ended up doing, or what I am ending up doing, I guess, because I cut it. Anyway, I've talked in the past about how the government has kept extending the state of emergency for Christchurch, and it still is in force. But what they did this week is they set up a special government agency to deal with and coordinate the recovery. It's called the Christchurch Earthquake Recovery Authority, or CERA, but everybody pronounces it CERA, which just sounds wrong to me because I keep hearing song titles or something, I don't know. But that's what it's called, and it has the same extraordinary powers that the Earthquake Recovery Minister has, meaning that this authority can override existing law, it can make policy on the fly. It could do basically whatever it wants to without Parliament exerting much in the way of oversight. Now, I say much because the government claims that there is adequate oversight. There are something like four people, and I don't know who they are, who are supposed to be keeping a watch on the activities of this authority to make sure that it doesn't go too far and so on. Well, I'm sorry, but I just don't have much faith in something with that much power not using it when it shouldn't. There may be times when that sort of thing is justified to speed the process along and so on, but I'm just leery. I don't like the idea of surrendering democratic control to an authority that has virtually absolute power. So this is something I'm probably going to come back to again in the future. I certainly understand why the government did it. They want to get Christchurch rebuilt as quickly as possible. The city council in Christchurch sees it as sort of a golden opportunity to remake Christchurch. They talked about how they had a lovely 19th century city, and now they have a chance to make a beautiful 21st century city in its place. Well, I don't know exactly what that means. Nobody does, to be honest, because it's, you know, nothing has been done yet. But it's obviously, this is going to be an ongoing topic for years to come, I think. And so I'll certainly keep you up to date about that as it comes. And I have to bear with me for a second. Bella just jumped up on my lap and I had to make room for her. Because you do, don't you? Now, there is one other story that is out of Christchurch. And it's a bit more, I don't know, it's sad, we'll just say that. And that's that the chief coroner, is getting ready to... Well, he's meeting with the families of the people who have not yet been identified. And I think this is about a dozen or so far. And his message basically is that it is probable that any number of them, perhaps all of them, or at least many of them, may never be identified. And we actually find out for the first time why that is the case, because we've been thinking, they talked earlier about crush injuries and horrific injuries, and we thought, oh, you know, maybe don't know what's left. But it's actually got to do with the Canterbury Television building, which pancaked, and then there was this massive fire as well. It turns out that the fire was intense, and it was crematorium-type intense. And so some of these people are basically completely gone. And so they're doing what they can to identify the bits and pieces that they've got. They've even sent some remains to the U.S. in the hopes that they can identify some of these bodies. But there will be some people who will never be identified, some remains that will never be identified. And so what they're proposing is to have a common grave for them. Now, TV One, which is the TVNZ, the biggest broadcaster, the state-owned broadcaster, keeps referring to it as a mass grave. And quite frankly, I don't like the fact that they're doing that, because that implies that there are hundreds and hundreds of bodies laid out like in a war cemetery in Europe or something, or Arlington or what have you. And that's not going to be what it is, because we're talking about, quite as the chief coroner put it, not a big amount of material. And there's no delicate way to talk about this. And TV One, to its credit, actually talked to one of the families whose son is missing, and see if they'd be okay with it. And the mother was saying, well, yes, because then there's a place to go visit. And I think that's really the point. Now, they did the same sort of thing after the Mount Erebus disaster, where some of the bodies were entombed together, and or the remains, I should say. And that's probably the smartest thing that they can do to deal with this situation. It is incredibly sad, but in this sort of situation, they're really, you know, you get to a point where there's just nothing more you can do. And that's sort of what they're getting toward, I think. But that was in the news just in the past couple of days. And I imagine that there will probably be some sort of grand memorial to the lost as well. And but that's all for the future as well. Nobody at this point is talking about specifically how anything in Christchurch is going to be rebuilt, let alone how a memorial is going to be done. So that's more topics for the future, no doubt. The other big story that's been in the news, and this is the one that was going on last week when I was recording, is that there was a member of the Labour Caucus. I don't know what his actual ranking in the list is, but he's, I think, third in terms of power or whatever. And his name is Darren Hughes, and he was the chief whip for the Labour Party, which is the person basically who corrals the members of the caucus to get them ready to vote and so on. And a story broke about a week or so ago, that early last week, that there had been a late night incident with a senior MP and that a 18-year-old man had laid a complaint. That was the original story. Well, within a couple of days, Darren Hughes said, "I'm the one that is has been complained about." And by this point, it had been revealed that the complaint was of a sexual nature, whatever that means. And in the end, he ended up resigning a couple of days later. I think it's effective Tuesday. I don't know if it's last Tuesday or tomorrow. I mean, this, I don't know. Anyway, he's resigned. Now, there's a lot of issues that are going on around this. First, the leader of the opposition, leader of the Labour Party, Phil Goff, didn't tell the rest of his caucus that this was going on. He didn't tell the party president, and today it was alleged he didn't even tell his press secretary that this was all going on. He knew about it for 10 days to 2 weeks before it became public knowledge, and he's been criticized for that. Now, he had a meeting of his, they call it the front bench, the senior members of caucus, earlier this week, and they all gave him, well, in front of the cameras, they gave him unified and unanimous support. I'm sure that there were heated words exchanged behind closed doors because he didn't handle it well. Now, the thing of it is that if the media knew about the rumors, it was inevitable the story was going to come out and he should have been better prepared for it when it did. And he wasn't. So he let the party down. He let Darren Hughes down. He let everybody down by doing that. Be that as it may, there are things about this story that really concern me. First of all, there has been a frenzy on the media to pursue this story that seems to be all out of proportion to its seriousness. Because, first of all, there a complaint has been laid with the police. We don't know any details about that. Nobody does. The police are not talking as well. They should not. And for all we know, the police may decide that there are no charges to be filed, that there's no case to be answered, and that'll be the end of it. Or they may lay charges against Darren, and then he'll have his day in court, and he can defend himself and so on. But the media tendency, as it is in so many places, is trial by news ink, you could say, or column inches or whatever. They've laid the charges, therefore the charges are true. And that's not the way it is in the real world. It could be that Darren is completely innocent. We don't know. Or he could be guilty. We don't know that either. We don't know anything. And the news media has been speculating like crazy about this. Not so much about what specifically happened, but to reveal all the salacious details, because that's what the news media loves. They love scandal, and the more salacious it is, the better they love it. And they were doing some, basically, certainly unethical things in Wellington, where this is alleged to have occurred, the young man is a student at a university there, and they've been trying to get information about him from other students. There has been a well-publicized incident where the reporter who's covering this for the Sunday Star Times allegedly tried to coerce a student into pretending to be a friend of this other student, the complainant, in order to get information about him, and the student wouldn't go along with it. Now, the paper and its editor deny it and say it was a complete fantasy. The guy who made the allegations, who's a lawyer, has come up with further evidence of that. Meanwhile, one of the people I follow on Twitter is a student at the same university. And she said that she's gotten a lot of calls from people who are trying to get information about this student, and they're pretending that they know her from, way back when. This guy apparently rang her up and said, "Oh, yeah, we were in fourth form together." And I don't know what age that is. Sorry, it's probably about 9 or 10 or something. And she said, "Uh-huh, I went to an all-girls school." So this sort of thing is going on, and that is... it's unethical. It violates the journalistic ethics for journalists in New Zealand, but it's also just slimy and stinky. And I really don't like where they're going with this. Now, I think things have eased up a little bit since Darren resigned from Parliament, which was certainly the honorable thing to do. And he probably ultimately had no choice whether he's guilty or not than to resign to sort of cauterize the wound, because we have an election coming up in only a few months. And the National Party is immensely unpopular, but the Labour Party is not popular either. And this whole thing would have just made it even harder for Labour to hold its ground, let alone gain anything against National. So he did the right thing, I think. But there's one other aspect of this story that has really annoyed me, and that is the media's framing of this as Darren, who's 32, he was elected to Parliament in 2002 when he was 24. as Darren as essentially preying on a teenager, a schoolboy. And that is absolutely not the case. An 18-year-old is well above the age of consent. An 18-year-old is perfectly legally competent to make decisions for himself about what he does or does not do, who he does and does not hang around with. And his age is not relevant in this case. Now, what they're really trying to imply, I think, is that there was some sort of coercion in use, basically rape. And that is a very serious allegation, and they've got nothing to back that up with. And unless there is some evidence about that, they really shouldn't be going down that road. But there have been a lot of people whose fixation on this case, among the media and also just some commentators in general, has been the fact that the young man was 18 and Darren was 32, and there's somehow something unseemly about that. Well, that's bullshit. If it was an 18-year-old girl and a 32-year-old man, people would disapprove, but their disapproval would be against the young woman, not against the older man. They would be, oh, she shouldn't be hanging around with an older man like that, or she should know better, she should this. There's a double standard that's going on here, and I find it grossly offensive on a lot of levels. It's offensive to women that an 18-year-old woman is too stupid to know any better. An 18-year-old man, however, does know better, but he must have been taken advantage of. And the fact that they assume that an older gay man is automatically predatory against a younger man, because it fits into this whole myth about gay people molesting children and recruiting and all this other bullshit. So as far as I'm concerned, the age of the complainant is absolutely, completely, and totally irrelevant. And it shouldn't even be brought up because it's only being brought up to prejudice people's opinions about this case. And until and unless there is some real charges to talk about, some real evidence, then the media should shut the fuck up about it and just let the police do their jobs, and then whatever happens, happens. Now, if there are charges laid, there will be other issues that we can discuss. For instance, the fact that Darren not only was not out in any manner, shape, or form, he apparently not so very long ago said to one of his caucus members that he's not gay. And he very well may not be. He may be homosexual, but that doesn't make him gay. We don't know any of the details of this. And there's way too much speculating going on about it. Now, that is a very complicated story, and I've actually only hit some of the biggest points in that whole story. But it was changing right in the middle of it when I recorded about it last week, and that's why I ended up cutting it. But it's sort of stable enough at this point, I guess you'd say, that I felt I could throw in my two cents, not about the case itself, but about the media's behavior, which is what concerns me more than anything. But those are some items from the New Zealand news, and that, of course, is a relatively constant feature of this podcast. But also, of course, I am an expat, so I often talk about expat issues, and I actually have some expat-related news in this issue. You may recall, or you may know, or may not, that it's going up, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, there was a court case in which a lesbian couple, one of the partners was facing deportation because she did not have a green card, and of course, a gay or lesbian American citizen cannot sponsor their legally wedded spouse for immigration, even though their heterosexual brothers and sisters can. A gay person cannot. And that's because of the Defense of Marriage Act, which forbids the federal government from recognizing a same-sex marriage for any and all purposes, including immigration, among many others. Now, the Obama administration has announced that they're not going to defend the law because it's blatantly unconstitutional, and among other things. And so that was part of the basis of the ruling in this case, that the Obama administration isn't defending the law. It will likely be overturned by court. And if not, there have already been repeal bills introduced in Congress, which will go nowhere thanks to the Republicans. And so by the judge's rationality, this case, the deportation case was unlikely to succeed ultimately, because if DOMA is overturned, then the Immigration Service will recognize the legally wedded spouses of a gay or lesbian American citizen. So this past week, earlier in the week, the U.S. Immigration and Citizenship Service, it's hard to say, they said that they were putting cases in abeyance. And originally, a lot of people thought that meant that they were no longer going to pursue deportation of these same-sex spouses. But it turned out that that's not what they meant at all. What it meant was that if a gay or lesbian American citizen filed a Form I-130 to have their same-sex spouse recognized for sponsorship for green card purposes, the Immigration and Citizenship Service would automatically reject the application because of the Defense of Marriage Act. And what apparently they meant is that they wouldn't necessarily reject them immediately. Well, that was the second speculation. It turns out now that the service is continuing with deportations as it did before, that because the law is in effect, they must continue to enforce it. And so they are going to continue proceeding with deporting same-sex couples. That is not the couples, but the foreign legally wedded spouse of a gay, lesbian, American citizen. Paradoxically, or maybe even worse, there is a case to be made that a gay or lesbian American citizen who marries their same-sex partner where it is legal, like Massachusetts or Connecticut or Iowa or wherever, actually makes their case worse, and it makes it more likely that they're going to be ripped apart by the U.S. government. Because if they marry, it's evidence to the U.S. government that the foreign national intends on staying in the U.S. permanently. And if they don't have a green card, that's forbidden. And because they've taken the step to stay there permanently, that's evidence that they're probably going to ignore their visas anyway and stay illegally, and the U.S. government then will speed up their deportation efforts. So U.S. citizens who are gay or lesbian are caught in this double bind. Not only is there absolutely positively no way for them to sponsor their spouse, their legally wedded spouse, for immigration purposes, if they do wed their spouse, if they do marry their spouse, they will probably make it more likely that the government will rip them apart. Now, Gerald Nadler, when you may recall from my episode with immigration equality, Gerald Nadler called this gratuitous cruelty. And I can't think of a better phrase to describe the way the U.S. government is treating its gay and lesbian citizens and their married spouses. It's just absolutely criminal what the government is being allowed to do. Now, eventually, this will be fixed by the repeal of DOMA. Once DOMA, that vile, disgusting bit of legislation, is finally gone, that will change the status for legally married same-sex couples, with a foreign partner in the couple. But it will do nothing for those who are not legally married or in the states where there is no legal marriage, potentially. And for that, you need more comprehensive immigration reform. Now, I would like to see comprehensive in the true sense of the word, that looks at the totality of immigration and finds a way to sort it out once and for all. However, my primary concern is the reintroduction of the Uniting American Families Act. And what that essentially would do is create a recognition mechanism in which the immigration people could recognize for immigration purposes the same-sex partner of a gay or lesbian citizen or permanent resident, which would be a big change for the U.S. because currently that's not possible for straights or gays. And that would bring it into line with many countries in the world. In New Zealand, for instance, gay and lesbian couples are treated exactly the same as heterosexual couples for immigration purposes. There is absolutely no difference. And married and unmarried doesn't make any difference as far as that goes. And in New Zealand, a permanent resident can sponsor their same-sex partner for immigration in the same way that a heterosexual can, and the same way that somebody who's married, a citizen can. So what is clear in policies of governments like New Zealand and other countries as well is the happiness of the people who live here, whether they're citizens or permanent residents. They want them to be happy and productive members of society. You cannot do that by telling people, we don't care how long you've been together, couple, you cannot be together. We forbid it. And the United States is often held up, certainly by its own citizens, as a paragon of virtue and achievement in all of Western civilizations. Well, there are some ways, and most rational people know this, where the U.S. gets it completely wrong, and immigration is one of those issues. Certainly when it comes to gay and lesbian people, but also one could argue in other ways as well. But my focus, my concern, of course, is primarily on gay and lesbian immigration. And the U.S. is light years behind most of the rest of the world at this stage, the developed world, that is. And it's about time they started catching up. Now, there's precious little that most of us can do at this stage. The Uniting American Families Act will be reintroduced in Congress, and again, the Republican leadership won't let it go anywhere. I don't think it'll even get committee hearings, let alone get a floor vote. So that's probably not going to happen. Our best shot at fixing any of this situation is for the repeal of DOMA, or the overturning of DOMA, whichever comes first. Because until the Defense of Marriage Act is overturned, there is no legal path for a gay or lesbian American citizen to sponsor their same-sex partner, spouse, in the same way that a heterosexually married person can. And that's not the perfect solution. It's only part of the solution, but at least it is a way that a binational couple can stay together. Now, one of the reasons why I live in New Zealand and why Nigel and I don't live in the United States is because when I came here 16 years ago, this was the only way we could be together. The laws in New Zealand were different at that time. They discriminated against gay people. There was a mechanism for a gay New Zealander, gay or lesbian New Zealander, to sponsor their partner, but it was double the length that it would take for an unmarried heterosexual couple, and five times nearly the amount of time that a heterosexual married couple had to be together. And as I said, that's all changed now. It's all the same. So that's irrelevant. But the point is that at the time that I came here in 1995, New Zealand had a path that we could be together as Nigel sponsoring me or what have you. The United States had nothing like that. 16 years later, nothing has changed. If anything, it's gotten worse because of the Defense of Marriage Act. So, you know, it's little wonder that this is such an emotional issue for so many people. Now, I've actually moved on, obviously, because I've built a life here in New Zealand, and it's frankly unlikely that I will ever live in the U.S. again. I don't know that. I'll never say never. But it's unlikely because certainly at the moment, there's no way for me to sponsor Nigel to join me in the U.S. And it's unlikely at this point that he would get a green card on his own. That's been true all along. Green cards are actually really hard to get, contrary to popular belief. And the only way that he could live in the U.S. is if he got a job with, say, a company that sponsored him. I've forgotten there's a particular name for that kind of visa, and I can't remember what it is. But that's a limited term, and it's limited to employment with that company. And so it's kind of like being an indentured servant, which is sort of what I was when I first came to New Zealand, of course. But at least there would be a path, and there isn't. So we're in New Zealand because of U.S. immigration law that was in place 16 years ago. And I know right now that there are plenty of gay and lesbian American citizens who are living overseas, not necessarily out of choice, but because that was the only option that was open to them if they wanted to be with their partner. And that is just plain wrong. So that's actually my little soapbox today too. But it is a topic that's going to be coming up again and again and again and again and again, I'm sure. And it sort of leads into the fact as well that I'm going to be having some American expats here on the podcast and other expats as well, for that matter. Their situations will all be different. There are quite a few of them who are heterosexual. In fact, probably most of the ones that I've been talking with are. But that's not exclusive, certainly. But the thing is that I think the expat experience is interesting of and by itself. And not every gay expat is an expat because of the U.S.'s boneheaded immigration laws. There are plenty of reasons why people are expats, and that's really what I want to explore by talking to all these different people, to sort of give an idea of why people are doing what they're doing, why they're overseas, and so on. So that's coming up. Also, you may remember that I have in the past talked with my buddy Mark from slapupsidethehead.com about Canadian politics, and he's going to be joining me soon to talk about the upcoming Canadian election. And he's actually running a campaign on his site to get Exodus, the ex-gay scam banned as a charity from Canada. I think I mentioned this when it happened here. Exodus Ministries New Zealand, or whatever it was called, was denied registration as a charity here in New Zealand because it's not a charity. It is a religious organization that does things that are actually harmful or certainly not in the public good. And so they were denied charity status. That doesn't prevent them from going into churches and doing their church thing. It just means they can't pass themselves off as a legitimate charity when they're not. And in Canada, however, Exodus is still registered as a charity, and Mark is working to try to get it unregistered. And so I hope that we're going to have a chance to talk a bit about that as well, because I think it's actually an interesting thing. But now, let's go on to the comments, and starting first with phone comments.
Hello? Get off my phone! Get off my phone, you little pinhead! Get off my phone! I'm going to lose my mind today!
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hey, Arthur, it's Zachary. I was just calling in to say hello. Because it's been what seems like forever since the last time I actually spoke to you. Anyway, so yeah, I hope everything is going well. Actually, I need to start listening more to podcasts and hopefully soon record a new show because it's been forever. And yeah, I guess I will talk to you later. Have a fabulous, fabulous day. And yeah, bye.
Well, thank you very much for that, Zekeby. Zekeby is on the Dangerous and Lovely podcast with Davey Dangerous, and he is a sweetheart. We have chatted on Twitter and on, what's that thing called? I can't even remember. A chatty thingy on the iPad. I can't remember what it's called because I don't use it anymore. That could be why. But he is a sweetie, and so do check them out, Dangerous and Lovely. They're in my, what do you call it, pod roll or blog roll or whatever it's called, on my podcast site, amaranthpodcast.com. And that's just my way of telling you that I didn't even think to get the URL before I started this. Oops. Let's go on to the next one.
Hi, Arthur. This is Nessa. I wanted to call and say happy anniversary. I think you said on the show that I listened to earlier today that Monday, which it should be Monday for you, it's Sunday for me. I don't know, you're in the future, it's all weird, you know. You said it was your anniversary, and I wanted to make sure that I took some time to call and say congratulations, that I very much enjoy your show, and I very much have enjoyed getting to know you and Nigel, and I absolutely adore the both of you, and I think that's it. Yeah. So I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Hello, Nessa. I couldn't resist saying that. That's Nessa from the Hello Nessa podcast, and she is, without a doubt, one of the sweetest, most wonderful people I have met in the internets, or through the internets, or whatever the phrase is. She is absolutely adorable. I can't say enough good things about her. And her podcast, I've praised her podcast before, and I'm certainly not going to stop praising it now, but it is one of the most interesting podcasts out there, because she's just lays it all out there. And it's something that a lot of podcasters don't do. I don't even do that particularly well. A lot of things I don't share. And in fact, I was thinking earlier today that this has nothing to do with Nessa, just with me, that unless I'm in a reasonably up mood, I generally won't even record a show. So that sometimes I'll put shows off because I'm just not in the right frame of mind. But Nessa shares everything, and she has that adorable laugh, so you can't go past that. And she's at Helena, and she's also taken up the thankless task of organizing the regular schedule for Pride 48. And having done last year's marathon schedule, I know how awful that is. So I don't envy that at all. But thank you for that, Nessa. And now on to the next call.
Hello, Arthur. It's still Monday here. It's still your Podiversary. It's your major Kev's wanted to call you a victory on this lovely Monday in March. Talk to you soon. Bye.
I'm not positive, but I think that's Drum Major Kev. I think that's what I heard. But whoever it is, thank you very much for the Podiversary greetings. I appreciate it. But, you know, there are times when the phone gods don't cooperate. And unfortunately, that was one of them. But thank you anyway. I do appreciate the thought. And now one last phone message.
Hey, Arthur, it's Kyle and Hoy. Just calling to say happy Podiversary. Oh, I'm a day late. Take care. Love the show. Bye.
Well, thank you for that, Kyle. And obviously, being late doesn't matter at all because I wasn't so anxious to record on my actual anniversary day. So it was just fine. Kyle is another of those people that I've met through the internet who I think is just spiffy. And we've met more recently than many of my other friends have. Does that make any sense? I'm not sure if it does. I think you know what I'm trying to say. But we've had good conversations either by email or through the comments and so on, and I just think he's wonderful. So thank you for that, Kyle. And thank you everyone who took the time to call me or to give me a happy anniversary Twitter message or what have you. I appreciate them all very much. Now, there are going to be some good things coming. Oh, one last thing. There is a written message over on the podcast site for episode 250. It was from Hat M, who said, happy podcasting anniversary. Thank you, Hat M. And he is from the Angry Pantry podcast. And you know what? I was about to say that he's on my pod roll, but I'm not sure that he is. Oh, geez, that's so out of date. Oh, I'll have to sort that out. But if he's not there, he will be soon, so just check back. I'm not lazy. I'm just busy. Okay, I am a bit lazy, but I am busy too. So, yeah, we are now in my fifth season of the Amarants podcast. There is a lot more to come this year and, well, and beyond. There are some developments that we're working on that, if they pan out, will be very exciting. And when I say we, it doesn't just mean me. But I'll tell you about that more if and when I have something to share, if that makes sense. I think it does. Last time I talked a bit about projects around the house. I've got nothing to update except that I did not finish Nigel's office as I had hoped I would, so I haven't done mine. I had another project come up before then. So that's still sort of hanging around, but maybe I can finish that this weekend. Hopefully. That'd be nice. But I don't know. We'll see. That is it for today. That is it for this week. Next week is my busy work week, so I don't know specifically how much time I'm going to have available to podcast, but we'll just see how it goes. I'm relatively optimistic about this month, so hey, you just never know, do you? That's it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarants Podcast at amarantspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarantspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.